So we had the great last king Yoshiyahu, who found the scroll predicting that the Beit HaMikdash should be destroyed and the Jewish people would be sent into exile. And along with the famous teaching of his great-great-grandfather David that there's always hope, he embarked on a teshuvah campaign. And he got rid of all of the idols. And in that regard, he was the greatest king that ever existed as far as being willing to uproot, going to the past. He even went to the Jewish idols that were in the 10 tribes and destroyed them. And not only did he destroy them, he made sure he wouldn't go back to them. It's almost like, you take away the keys from a drunk driver. You know, he made sure that nobody... He went to that valley where they slaughtered the kids, and he made it impure, and he put bones there, and he filled it up. And sometimes people, they get rid of... Sometimes people do good, but they don't stop doing bad. And then sometimes people stop doing bad, but they don't make sure that they won't go back. And we mentioned that one of the problems with these backyard bummas was that they could be used for Hashem, and very easily they could be converted to use for an idol. And Yoshiyahu really got rid of all of the idols and really embarked on a campaign to bring everybody to Teshuvah from his wicked father Menasseh. And he almost succeeded. What happened was that he was... he didn't... sometimes this happens with great people, is that they don't confer with others. They don't ask for advice. They think they know, since they are so great and they know so much, they don't consult others. And when the Egyptians wanted to cross to Eretz Israel, he thought, well, the Torah says that when God will be with us, that we won't have foreign armies passing through the land. And he thought, well, Hashem will protect us if we go out against them. But he didn't. He wasn't aware that he had started believing in himself too much. In other words, he believed that he had done the job, that he had gotten rid of all the idols, and that Hashem would protect us. But he wasn't aware that behind closed doors, people were still worshiping idols, and that he had more work to do. And unfortunately, he went out in a campaign to stop Paro, and he was killed there. The first of the keynotes on Tisha, one of the first keynotes is about Yoshiyahu. That was the, because he was the king that could have done it. The next four kings, the 22 years between the four of them, they were the end. None of them were really in the pattern of David HaMelech. None of them were in, the great kings, the great leaders. We mentioned during his time that they buried the Aron, and the Shlomo HaMelech had created a secret hideaway for the Aron that people are still looking for today. Like, everybody wants to find it, but there is the Aron, and was buried. Then we begin with the his descendants. So the first king was a son of his, only lasted 3 months. His name, let's see, the names sound very familiar here, and that is the challenge with these last of the four kings. He's on verse 30. What happens here is that there's a little bit of confusion about who is on the throne. One of the things that we notice, that the next king is anointed. It doesn't say that, he uses a funny term. He's anointed by the people of the land, which almost implies that he may not have been accepted by his colleagues or by the army, or we just know it says the people of the land made Yoachaz is the king. And he was 23 years old, and he lasted 3 months, and done, finished. He was a bad king. And so the first son of Yoshiyahu bites the dust. He was deposed by Paro. And that's where we left off. Then we get the next king after Paro. That's Yoyakim. So, again, the great Yoshiyahu dies. One of his sons, named Yoachaz, they all start with Yo, last 3 months, gets deposed by Paro, and then his next son, who's also an evil son, Yoyakim, he's going to be on the land. The interesting thing was, one of the things that he did is the taxes that he raised. He taxed the middle class. That was the unforgivable sin. In other words, Paro levied a tax on him that he should have covered, and instead he made the people pay for it. That was the last thing that we learned on chapter 24, which we thought was all timely, the discussion. Just a geographical story here. The Eretz Yisrael at that point was sandwiched between two kingdoms. In the south was Egypt, and then in the north was Assyria, Nebuchadnezzar, and they both were superpowers, and there was tiny Eretz Yisrael in between, was trying to survive. And Eretz Yisrael was trying to, at one point they thought Egypt would protect them against the northern kingdom. You should never rely on Egypt. That was always the rule, that you can't rely on Egypt. That was the pattern of Tanakh, that Egypt would never be a full partner with us. They would never love us. We have a history with Egypt. But some of the kings did rely on Egypt. Egypt in the last chapter deposed the king and put in the next king. This next king is Yoyakim, is a wicked king. And let's see what happens here. Chapter 24. The Yom of Olu Nebuchadnezzar Melech Bavel. In his days, Nebuchadnezzar now comes on the world scene, and Vehilo Yoyakim Evid. And Yoyakim decides to be subservient to Nebuchadnezzar, Sholoshanim, but Yashem Yerubo. And then he rebels against Nebuchadnezzar. One of the traits that we mentioned, that Jews are very stubborn. There are other people that go with the flow and that always tend to do what they're told. Jews have always been revolutionaries. We always have a spark inside us that it's just been a common thread. And one of the challenges was that it was always hard for us to accept these other superpowers. These were wicked powers, and Jews wanted their independence. And sometimes, if we're worthy of it, it's a good thing. If we're not worthy of it, we're asking for trouble. The Jews thought they could defeat the Roman Empire, looking back at it, what were they thinking? The Roman Empire was, they ran the whole world. They were mighty, and the Roman legions. And the truth is, we came pretty close. And it says in Rome, it was the hardest campaign the Romans ever fought was against tiny Israel. But it was suicide to try to defeat the Roman Empire. And as much as it would have been good for us, at that point, the appropriate thing would have been to humble ourselves and not fight the Roman Empire. But over here, the question was to be a vassal to Nebuchadnezzar and pay the taxes, and he rebels. Verse 2, V'yishlach Hashem bo'ez gudidei chastim. And Hashem sent all kinds of enemies against us. One of the reasons was that this king was really bad. This king, Yoyakim, he went out of his way to do evil. So Hashem sent enemies against us. He sent armed terrorists. Gedudei. Gedud means like bands of terrorists. Of Kastim, Gedudei Aram, Gedudei Moab. There's four different groups that are attacking us. Gedudei Bnei Amon. When it's open season on the Jews, then they all join in. That was the pattern here in verse 2. Yishalchem Yehuda Lavido. And this was part of our punishment. Kedvar Hashem Asher Dibre Biyad Avada. And we were warned by the prophets. Verse 3, this was all part of Hashem's plan, that Hashem had decided he had enough. Now, it mentions again, what was the primary sin? Verse 4, that there was a lot of bloodshed. They didn't value human life. There were too many people that were killed. There was innocent blood that was spilled. And Hashem didn't want to forgive it. All the rest is written about him in those books. There's a lot more written about him in the book of Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu came and read him the prophecy of Eicha, that Israel would be destroyed and the king would be carted away. And when Yirmiyahu read it, he didn't like the message, so he took it and he threw it in the fire. Therefore, what Hashem then came back to Yirmiyahu and said, rewrite the scroll, but this time add another chapter. because when the king thinks that he hears about a message from Hashem that there's a problem, and instead of fixing it, he wants to make it worse. This was really a bad, evil king. He was carted off. Nebuchadnezzar came against. I've got to get the right king. Yeah, Nebuchadnezzar came up against him and got ready to take him down to Babel in chains. And he died before they could. He was too. He didn't survive the trip down to Babel. That was Jehoiakim. That was the story. Okay. Verse 6. Vishav Yoachim Yavosef. And he lied down with his father. Yimi Yoachim Benotan. His son, Yoachim. Again, they all sound alike. He's in charge. Velo Hosef Od Melech Mitzrayim Lasis Ma'arto. What happened to Egypt now? Egypt's out of the picture. Melech Mitzrayim Kilach Melech Bavel Menachem Mitzrayim Bad Nar Pras Kol Asher Haisim Melech Mitzrayim. It's interesting that it throws this in here about Egypt. What it's trying to say was that we made the wrong bet. In other words, we bet on Egypt helping us against the power of Nebuchadnezzar, and in the end, Egypt never came to our aid. They never came to help us. All that investment in Egypt as a friend, it didn't come to help us. Okay, verse 8. Ben Shmona Esrei Shana, in the 18th year, Yoachim Malko Shlosha Kadosh Yemala. He was king for 3 years.
Three months,
thank you. That's what I meant, 3 months. He was king in Yerushalayim. V'Shemimo Nehushta. His mother's name was Nehushta, which I've never heard that name before, but why not? Nehushta sounds like copper, or Nachash is a snake. It's not a nice name for a lady, the snake lady, but okay. Bas El Nassan Yerushalayim. Yasa Rabbi Nehushta, and he did evil in the eyes of Hashem. Now, this is very interesting. Now, we always find that when a king is really bad, a few of the kings only got a few months, and then they were this one also. So, again, I mentioned the last four kings would be 22 years between all of them. The first one was 3 months and then got carted off to Egypt, and he dies there. The second one was 11 years, and that was the one that was just captured by Nebuchadnezzar. And this is the third one, and he's king for 3 months. And what happened was, Nebuchadnezzar, it's very interesting, his advisor said to him, what did you do in your campaign in Israel? And he said, oh, I taught that king a lesson. I went and captured him, and he died. And they said, well, who did you leave in charge? And he said, oh, his son. They said, well, that's not very smart. If you're going to, you murdered his father and you're going to put the son in charge and you expect him to be a good servant, he said, no problem. He turned around 3 months later and went to get the son. That's what happened over here. Verse 10, Beisahi Olu Avdei Nebuchadnezzar, and he didn't even bother coming up himself. He just sent his servants back up, the king of Babel to Shalim, and he brought the city under siege. His troops, his servants, made a siege of the city. Now, this king, Jehoiakim, was a bad king, just like his father and his actually this would have been his uncle. And the interesting thing was, his father didn't really surrender. His father was kind of captured. And here, what he does is he comes out on his own. He realizes that it's not worth fighting or giving up life. And there were other kings that took the people with them. And they knew that there was no... It's almost like Assad, you know. He has no chance, but he's going to kill as many people to take him out. The same thing with Libya. They didn't go willingly, so to speak. So what this king does... As let's read it in verse 12. Yetze Yoachim Melech Yehuda al Melech Bavel Hu v'Imo Bavodim. He gives up. He accepts his fate, and he's willing to give himself up if it will save his fellow Jews. He realizes he doesn't fight it, and ultimately, even though again when he was king he was pretty bad, as when he's taken to Bavel and he's a prisoner, he does teshuva. And he turns out a lot better. And the only descendants we have from King David came from him. We're going to see, in other words, the Davidic line is preserved through this king. And partially, it's really the concept of David that, if you remember, that Shaul sinned and David sinned. And all people sin. It's part of life. We're human. But the difference between the two was that David, when he was told he sinned, when Shaul was told he sinned, he said, "Who, me? I did a mitzvah. You know, I did what was right." David, when he was told he sinned, he confessed and he accepted it. Being willing to not be in denial and being willing to accept one's sins and being willing to pick oneself up and face the consequences of a person's actions, that's, original man. We ate from the tree and God said, "Who told you you were naked?" And he should have said, "I'm sorry, I goofed." Instead, he blamed his wife, right? I mean, that's the things don't change, right? So what we have to learn in life is not don't sin. We're human. We'll make mistakes. But when we make those mistakes, be honest about them and try to fix them. And over here, as bad as he was a bad king. He only lasted 3 months. God turned Nebuchadnezzar around. He went home and he put it in the eyes of his servants to say, "You left his son in charge, go back and get him." So he went back and he got him. But he came out on his own. He accepted that he didn't want a human lives to be killed because of him. And he came out with his wives and his servants and he went to Bavel. Now I told you a little bit of the story. That while he was kept in prison in Bavel, they weren't that kind to the country people they took over, and he was kept in really a hole in the ground for many years. And after many years had gone by, the people began to be concerned that the last kings of Israel would be wiped out and there would be nobody of the Davidic line left alive. So they wanted to find a way that his wife could, that they could produce a child that would, this way the house of David would continue. So Nebuchadnezzar, they couldn't get anywhere. So they went to Mrs. Nebuchadnezzar. She had a soft spot and they said, "Well, the husband and wife haven't been together all these years and, you know, he was a king and, you know, you've got to be, you know, kind to..." And somehow they prevailed on her to agree to lower Mrs. Yochanan down into the prison. They did so, and when they lowered her down into prison, now first of all, at that point she was older and may not have been able to bear a child, but Hashem caused her system to start, and when the king was there, she mentioned to him that it was the wrong time. According to the Jewish laws of Nida, they couldn't be together. Now, they hadn't seen each other for many years in prison. And the remarkable thing was that when he had been in the land of Israel and he had been king, he hadn't followed those laws. But after sitting in a dungeon for many years, he decided that, come what may, he was going to be loyal to Hashem. And he didn't touch her. And somehow they prevailed on the queen to let her come down again another time. And Hashem said, "Wow, you know, he's really learned his lesson." And they had a child, and that was the Mashiach going to come from that. You know, like he had to be in prison 20 years or however many years to realize that. Now Nebuchadnezzar died, and they let him out of prison, and then he died the next night. That was the whole story with the. Could be he couldn't take the excitement, or who knows? It's just an interesting. There are a lot of, like, you know, just the history of it. But at this point, he was a bad king. The only message, though, is that a person, you never give up on life. You know, like, sometimes when things are going good, they don't work out. But it doesn't mean, you know, you ask the founder of Home Depot, like, he got fired, and then he went to, his boss fired him. He had a mediocre kind of job working for someone else. And then he went on to become a billionaire by starting, the guy did him a favor by firing him. But it's also like that in life. We never know when, at what stage and at what point our actions will be the ones that will determine who we are or how we... I don't know if you remember with David HaMelech that one of Hashem, David HaMelech, his whole life when he was king, wanted to create a dynasty, wanted to create a service of Hashem. And Hashem said to him, "Well, you're just not what the forefathers were. What can I tell you?" And when David HaMelech was son rebelled against him, and he had to run away, and he was barefoot, and he was broken, one of the people had come out and started throwing rocks at him and said, "You deserve this because you were good for nothing, you're a sinner." And one of David's men said, "Should I take his head off, Yoav?" Right? And David said, "Listen, if Hashem made my own son be angry with me, it's not time for me to take revenge." And Hashem said, "Now, in this moment, you've earned the right for Mogen David to be the shield of Hashem and the forefathers of the Jewish people." And there's an idea that there's forefathers are the three legs of a chair, and David is the fourth. But he earned that not when he was king and he was on the throne and he was praying and he was playing his harp in the Beis HaMikdash, but when he was running away from his son at his lowest moment. We don't really know when our challenges are in life. We really don't. We don't know, and we don't know when we're going to pass the test. We don't know which moments of the test. So this king was a rotten king, and he was thrown in the dungeon, and at some point in the dungeon, he realized that he had rebelled against Hashem, and he was being punished. And eventually, the Davidic line continued through him. That was the story. But at any rate, that's later. He goes down to Babel, and now we'll see what happens. Now, this would have been a very low moment. This is the second time. The first time they just took the king. The king died. 3 months later, they take the next king. And in addition, verse 13, V'yetzi Misham et kol ortzos beis Hashem. He has a different plan. He figures that if he wants the Jewish people not to rebel, he has to take away all the treasures of the Jewish people. So he sacks the temple. They melt down the gold, the Otzos Beis HaMelech, and they take away all the king's treasures and all the government, Mikatzis, Kol Klei Zav, Asher Asa Shlomo. He went and he took the national treasures, the beautiful things that Shlomo HaMelech had made, the Heichal Hashem, Kasher Dibur Hashem. Verse 14, the Heglez Kol Yushalayim, and he exiled most of Yushalayim, as Kol Asaram, all of the officers, as Kol, all of the mighty men, Eshim Alofim, Aser Alafim, 10,000 Golav, Kol Acherish Vamazgir, and all the craftsmen, all the industrious people, Onisha Zula, the only ones he left were the, like the water carriers, the Amorites. He left like the poor and the untrained. We have a tradition that who were the craftsmen? These were the scholars, the rabbis. He took all of the intelligentsia. Is that the word? Intelligentsia. That's the word that they. He really took the greatest of the people and sent them into exile. Now, at the time, this seemed really awful, but actually, it was the saving grace, because what happened was when the Beis HaMikdash would be destroyed, these people were then brought into Babel. And they weren't brought in slavery. Some of them were semi-slaves, but they were just transported. They were sent into exile. Mordechai was with this group. And they set up a Jewish community in Babylon. And these were the leaders and the officers. And they set up the whole infrastructure of the Jewish people. They set up yeshivas. They set up shuls. They have a shul I think that's the area of Babylonia. They have a shul that I think to this day they think it's one of the original shuls that was set up when they.
Aleppo,
is it Syria? I mix up all the Arab. I don't know my geography that well. But they brought them there and they set up a community. So when Eretz Yisrael was destroyed and the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, and they brought the people to Babel. They brought them to a Jewish community, and the Jewish community redeemed the captives, and they had schools to go to, and they took care of their brothers like Jewish communities always do, and it wasn't so bad, because this earlier group had a chance to set up the community. One of the challenges in America when the refugees came here was they came to the Wild West and they came to the South. There was no existing community. The people came to town, there was no kosher food, there was no mikveh, there was no, it was very hard, there was no infrastructure here. So if you come to a community where it's very hard to be a refugee and to build a community. So here they came to an existing community with this early exile. If you remember the Purim story, there was a question whether or not the Jews would ever be saved, because there was a prophecy that after 70 years we would go back. Most of them counted the 70 years from this exile, because this is when the Jewish community that was in Persia from Mordechai started. So they figured the 70 years were up. Nothing happened. That's when Achashverosh brought the vessels of the temple. Actually, the earlier king brought the vessels out, and then there was the handwriting on the wall. But partially there was some confusion as to when there were several exiles. It wasn't just the exile when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. This one was before that. But this one, they left the Beis HaMikdash standing. But the majority of the people, the upper... all the craftsmen, all the workers, all the officers, all the people of importance were all taken away, and that happened over here. So, and they were brought to Babel with the king, as we mentioned, and they were brought to Babel. 16. Mes kol anshe hachal shivas alafim vechor shemaske elav hakol giborim osi milchama. The king took them and he just stripped Eretz Israel of anybody that would stage a rebellion, so he thought, but anyway, and he brought them golem buffalo. That was the new strategy that he had. So 17. So now who's going to lead the remnant of the people? The Yimlach, Melek Bavles, Matanyahu Dodo. He took an uncle. He knew that if he had a leader, in order for the leader to be listened to, he had to have some yichus, he had to be somewhat of the Davidic line. So he took Netanyahu, and he put him as king. Now, he gave him a name. This was the custom then, like to show that he was subservient to them, he gave him a name. I mean, Lahavdil, it's like with the Pope, you know, they give names when they make them the Pope, and they, you know, they change their name. So he gave him a name, and he called his name Sidkiyahu. Sidkiyahu means like tzedek, be righteous with me. In other words, he made Sidkiyahu swear that he would be loyal to Bavel. And according to many people, Sidkiyahu eventually, Bavel came back and wiped out the land of Israel when Sidkiyahu broke his promise, as we're going to see. But this is king number four, and he's the final king. He's really it. He was the last of the Davidic line, king, and his name was Sidkiyahu. Ben Esri and Ba'achas Shana, he was 21 years old, the Malka. Ba'achas Esri Shana, and he was king for 11 years. Shemimo, and his mother's name was Hamital Bas Yirmiyahu Melivna, from the city of Livna. Verse 19, V'yasa Rabbein Hashem, Kol Asher Aso Yo Yochim. He did evil in the eyes of Hashem. Now, it's interesting, in the Gemara, they don't see him as being quite so evil. In other words, they paint a worse picture of him here than the Gemara paints. Most people, it's very interesting. What happened to him? I'm telling you the end before the beginning. But his children were slaughtered, and then they blinded him. He tried to escape when the he did rebel, and he thought that he could defeat Bavel, and he rebelled, and he was blinded. Now, we have an idea that things happen mida keneged mida, which means that everything, when a person is punished, they're punished in the way that they sinned. So he was punished with blindness. He was blinded. And that kind of tells us that he was blind. He was in denial that Israel was going to go into exile. He felt that somehow that he could ignore history, he could ignore the prophets. And if you remember, Yirmiyahu told him that Israel would be destroyed, so he put Yirmiyahu in prison. But he wasn't personally wicked in that he butchered people and he did idol worship like the other kings, but he failed as a leader because he was blind. He failed to see what was happening. And ultimately, if the leader leads the people into doom, so you have to say he was a bad leader. He was blinded. He failed to see. Personally, he was not a bad person, which is just interesting. Like sometimes you look at a person as we had Achav, who was a wicked person personally, but wasn't a bad king. You know, he was a good businessman, so to speak, or he did good for the country, but he was personally not a bad person, Sidkiyahu, but he was blinded. He didn't see what was happening. But Yasser Rabbi Nekol Asher, so he was like Yochan. Af Hashem Ha'is Yerushalayim. He should have read the cards that Hashem was angry with Yerushalayim Yehuda. And you see, if people are blind to it, they're unable to fix it. Ad Hashlicha Osam. And it describes Hashem as like casting us away. Nishlach is like Hashem, like, you know, you throw it away. Like Hashem was like so angry with us that you know, that we were on Hashem's face, like in Hashem's loving presence, and Hashem just had it with us. We weren't worthy of that closeness to Hashem. What did he do that was the cause of that? He rebelled against the king of Babel. So let's see what happened. Now, if you remember, the king of Babel probably had enough over here. He tried. You know, he'd already been up there twice. He was trying to control these Jews, these stubborn Jews. They rebelled. Emperors, what they wanted were people that would be vassals, that would just pay their tax and, you know, just, you know, do whatever they were told. And now again, he has trouble with the Jews. He has rebelled. So let's see what happens. We'll keep on going. The Hibashana happened in the ninth month, the Chodesh Asiri, on the tenth of the month. He comes to Yerushalayim. And I think it's next Sunday, which is the beginning of the 3 weeks, Shiva Asur B'Tammuz. That's exactly the date of the encampment on Yerushalayim. And once the army comes up against the city, that's the beginning of the end. In other words, when they come up with the siege, they start blockading the city, and they encamp there, and they get ready to destroy it. Yichan Aleha, and he built a dike. Not a dike, they call it siege work. I guess they block off the area and they cut off the vegetation, a city, a walled city, that they need a food supply. They have no access to food. The Tavo Ir B'Matzor, and so the city was under siege, was famine. Adashtei Esrei Shana L'Mel Sukiyo, up until the 11th year. So, I didn't want to. We can read do a little more. So Batisha Lachodesh, so on the ninth of the month, which would be the ninth of Av, Ichazak Arav the ear, and there was a big famine, but Lechem, there was no more food, Lamor Tzivka ear, and they broke into the city, the Kolan Shea Milchama, Laila Derek Shar, Beinachoma, they somehow got in through the walls, the siege, Ashal Ganamel, Lechasim Al Ir Savid, but Yeruder Arava, and they came, they described exactly how they came into the city. And the king, he thought he could escape. Again, he thought he was above this all. And they were anxious to get the king. They see Goso, and they caught him near Yericho. And he didn't have his army with him. They know where they have a place. The tour guides can take you there to tunnels where they where you can where they caught him. The Medrash says that they were deer hunting, the soldiers, and they chased after a deer, and they found the opening of the cave, and that's where the king. This was a secret cave. The king had his escape route. He thought he could, you know. He thought, oh, so what? They're going to come and take Yerushalayim. I've got my escape route, right? He had his gold, and he thought, who was it? Gaddafi thought he would get away, right? You know, they all think they're going to get away. They're going to be. Well, he escaped, and then he went to fight against them, but Iraq, Saddam Hussein, they all somehow think that they're going to escape. It's going to be fine with them. They'll get away with the gold. And this is what happened to Sibkio. He had an escape route planned, and so he really was in denial of the whole picture, and Hashem caused him to be caught. Verse 6, Vitius Amalek, and they caught the king. They yellow Estel Amalek, and they brought him to Babel, Rivlasa, Yidabra Ito Mishpat. And They gave it to him. Mishpa means they read him the riot act. They slaughtered his son. The Hebrew of this is awful. Shaftu means they shechted them. Now, it's even worse. They say when a person is blinded, the last thing they see is what sticks with them. Because in other words, when a person goes blind slowly, they don't know, they see a lot of things they're like, but if a person goes all of a sudden blind, so the strongest image in their mind was the last thing they did. So when they wanted to torture somebody, they would do something terrible in front of his eyes and then blind him out, so that the rest of his life, the last image of light he would remember, would be that of his children being killed. And that was the punishment they did. And they put him in chains, and they brought him down to Babel. And that was the... We don't have anything nice to say. You know, you read the book of Echa, and it sounds kind of strong in terms of what we talk about Babel. Babel was an awful kingdom. They were tyrants and brutal. There were many reasons why the king would have rebelled. But really, he should have realized that Hashem was angry with us. That was the... sometimes a person fights the symptoms, but they don't fight the disease. In other words, to fight against the king of Babel, ultimately they had to realize that Hashem had said we were no longer worthy of being in His presence, and we should have tried to fix that. And it was like what the earlier king had done, where he burnt the scroll. As long as people are in denial of the problem, they'll never get better. And so that was the blindness that he had, and that led to the destruction. But the good news was that Hashem paved the way with the earlier exile, and we have a tradition that Hashem destroyed the building but left the people intact. And that's always been the Jewish people, that you know, we don't always get to take our money with us. We don't always, the building sometimes gets destroyed, but Hashem loves us and wants us to fix the problem. And so He cushioned the blow, so that when the people were sent into exile, they came to an existing community and they were able to rebuild. And 70 years later, they were back. And that's that's part of the history of the Jewish people. So what happened is 70 years later, we came back. Mm-hmm. As we go into exile, and the kingdoms change. Babel is just taken over by Persia. Mm-hmm. And that's
the Persians.
And then the Persians, according to some people, it was Esther, who her son was the one that arranged for us to come back, Darius. And then we came back after 70 years, and then it was a new kingdom. And the Maccabees were the kings of the second kingdom after that time. So, God willing, we should be able to finish next time.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.